try.
You are going to tell me? You are going to tell me?
Welcome you today to the March session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is David Hardenberg. I am from here in Papillion, representing this district. I'm proud to be joined by our Chief Judge, Frankie Moore, from North Platte, who is to my right, and also pleased to be joined by Mike Pirtle, who is from Omaha, and he is to my left. We have three cases on the call today, and as your case is called, please give me a moment to recall your case before you start your argument, in that we do record these arguments so that they will be available on our website at a later time. The first case for this morning is Bramble versus Bramble. So, counsel, you may approach. You can be seated at counsel table. And again, the first case again is Bramble versus Bramble. Mr. John, you may approach.
Good morning. Please support counsel. My name is C.G. Jolly, and I represent the appellant Lori Bramble in this appeal. And my understanding is that the rebuttal time that I'm reserving is 2 minutes, unless I ask for a different amount of time, so I'm just asking for the 2 minutes.
All right.
Thank you. This is an appeal of an order appointing Ms. Bramble in contempt of a decree that was entered on February 22nd, 2016. That was actually an amended decree, and the relevant portion of that decree this appeal stated that Ms. Bramble, when she vacated the residence on February 29th, 2016, was ordered not to remove any fixtures or major appliances, except that Lori may remove either the clothes washer or the clothes dryer on her departure. On March 14th of 2016, the appellee, James Bramble, filed an application for an order to show cause and alleged violations of that provision, and also alleged that Lori had violated provisions of the parenting plan. The order to show cause, I believe, was entered on March 16th of 2016, the contempt trial started October 24th of 2016 and continued into January 10th of 2017. The judge entered a purge order on January 13th of 2017. He specifically found that Lori was not in contempt for violating the parenting plan, but he did find her in contempt for, upon her departure, she removed both the clothes washer and dryer and replaced the dryer with another unit. He also found that Lori admitted to removing the ceiling fans, the dishwasher, the range, refrigerator, and microwave.
Let's get to the elephant in the room.
Yes, sir.
The question that I think is looming is whether or not you have appealed from a final appeal board.
Yes, and I did receive an email from the clerk's office citing a few cases that the court wanted me to address. And I believe that the cases, and I'm going to butcher the name, I've never been able to pronounce it, Hassani versus Elizada and Meisinger are cases that we can look at to determine whether or not this was a final appealable order. The Meisinger case, the court found that that was a modification of the decree instead of just a contempt finding with sanctions. And in the Hosseini case, the court found that both parties were in contempt, but that the mother had not had sanctions issued against her. This case is distinguishable. I think it's pretty clear to me that it's distinguishable because not only did the judge find Lori in contempt, Your Honor, he also imposed sanctions and required her to pay roughly $5,000.
Is that a sanction or is that a purge?
That's part of the Curtis plan, Judge. But if you look at the case law, specifically you look at Hosseini, the court said that the determination of whether the party is in contempt and the sanction to be imposed are reviewed for abuse of discretion. So it says to be imposed. So the case law does contemplate that if there is a sanction that's identified, that would be sufficient to make an appealable order. The only option that Ms. Ramble would have had would have been to show up at 10:30 on March 13th for sentencing, which of course implies that she would have been placed in jail at that time. So when she posted her appeal bond for $5,000, she had already in a sense, had already satisfied the purchase portion of the plan by at least putting the money there so that if she does, she's not successful in the appeal, then that money is obviously available. So I think that this situation, I think it's clearly distinguishable from my scenario where the courts just simply modified the decree and came up with an entirely new conditions that were contrary to the original.
Can you explain again how you think this situation is different from the Hosseini set of facts?
Well, in Hosseini, the court just held an anomalous attempt and did not impose sanctions. But the court, when it on remand, my understanding is that the court, Your Honor, would sit it back down with the trial court to determine the appropriate sanctions at that time tomorrow. And so even though the mom had not even had sanctions imposed on it, the court still reviewed that order as a final appealable order.
So what about the provision that the court set a sentencing hearing for March 13th? Isn't the sentencing potentially the sanction?
If she did not comply with the monetary sanction, Your Honor, it would have been. But since she did comply with the monetary sanction by placing the money in the court for purposes of the appeal bond, I think that at the very least, that would have perfected it, made it a final order for purposes of appeal. So in a sense, she was paying what she was ordered to pay. There's really nothing else she could have done to rid herself of the, well, I guess nothing else she could have done to make the order any more final or any more appealable at that point.
Well, it places her in a difficult spot if it's not a final order, does it not? Because she either pays or she doesn't pay and she risks a greater sanction. Is that?
That's, Your Honor, that actually is probably the one argument that's not only, I think, supported by the newer line of cases from the Steele 2010 and after. I think it's consistent with really the practical considerations for reviewing a contempt order. You require somebody to go to jail if they've complied with a monetary sanction. And so I think that the court's point now is also one of the primary considerations. What else could she have done short of actually going to jail? Really nothing.
Could she have paid the civil fine and then appealed after that?
Your Honor, if she had paid, she did it by way of the supersedious bond. If she had paid it directly to him, if I was the appellee, I would argue that now this is moot. If she's paid him the financial consideration, then the appeal should be moot.
Could she have paid it in court and then the court could have just held it until you know, further review or further hearing?
And she did pay it in court, Judge, and that's where it is right now. And my motion for court to alter amend the decision was summarily denied without a hearing. So the bond, and that was actually before she posted the bond, but she posted the supersedious bond in the court, and thereafter she filed a notice of appeal.
But she never went to the sentencing hearing.
No, Your Honor. My understanding is once she posted the supersedious bond, that she had essentially complied with the financial sanction of paying Mr. Ramble roughly $3,500 for the appliances and $1,500 in attorney fees. And so at that point, there would have been the purge order said either pay or show up for sentencing. So she paid, but she paid by way of bond. So she could preserve her appeal, because if she had paid it directly to Mr. Ramble, I don't think that she could have appealed. I think at that point it would have become moot. So I anguish over whether this was a final order. I'm not taking it lightly by any means.
You feel our pain, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think if you look at the line of cases after the 2010 Spiel case, where the court is trying to open the door a little bit more and try to clarify the reviewable nature of contempt findings, I think that this is one of those cases that prior to that, I still think this case would have been considered a final order and appealable, but since then, I think the court's been pretty clear.
Which case after Schmiel would you say is best supportive of your position?
Really, the Hosseini case, Your Honor. I think it's probably the 2012 case. I think when the court stated that that a whether a party is in contempt and it's sanctioned to be imposed, is reviewed for abuse of discretion.
So the problem with that is the sanction to be imposed. I mean, normally in a contempt hearing, a sanction would be set. This is a little bit different, where he chose to wait and do sentencing. But oftentimes, at least or most times, wouldn't the sanction be set so it would say to your client, you need to do X, Y, and Z, and if you don't, then this is the sanction that you're going to receive?
Yes, Your Honor. The purge order said pay these financial sanctions or show up for sentencing. And so we don't know what that would have been necessarily, but the implication when somebody, the court says show up for sentencing, it sounds like she may go to jail. And so that would have been her option, to show up and go to jail. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Spomer? You may proceed.
May it please the court? Megan Spomer, counsel for Appalee in this case, I'll speak directly to the elders, if that's all right. I've reviewed the cases as requested by the court, and Mr. Jolly and I disagree as to the extent that Hosseini, I think, helps him. Hosseini sets a new standard as opposed to the Smale fire apparatus case in terms of the standard of review. Otherwise, I don't know that it actually applies to our case. In our case, there was finding of contempt. There was a purge order set, and there was a sentencing hearing set. The purge has not been paid because Mr. Bramble has not been made whole. In contempt, the purge is designed to be coercive and to help the contendor come into contempt. And it's not a sanction in that sense. You're just being ordered to do what you were previously ordered to do in the civil context. In our case, Ms. Bramble chose not to pay the purge to Mr. Bramble, which I would agree would dismiss the contempt. I don't think that paying the purge would then allow for the remedy.
How would she then appeal and not face an argument from your client that the issue is now moot?
That's what I'm saying. I think she would, by purging herself, then the court would order enter an order dismissing the contempt, and she would lose her ability. I would agree with you on that point. But I think the court can look to Stickler, the 2016 Court of Appeals case, for a means by which she could avoid paying the purge, and if the court would like to cite on that, I could cite it.
Sure.
It's 293 NEB 521, 2016, Stickler v. Stickler. In that case, the facts are actually remarkably similar. The contendor in that case was the husband, and he was ordered to split his IRA in the divorce decree. Several years went by, he did not, instead of splitting the IRA as he was ordered to, he dissipated much of it. And at the end of the day, there wasn't enough to give to the wife once it came to light that had not been established. He was found in contempt. He was ordered a purge, and he was ordered to serve 90 days. In that case, like the judge intimated here, the judge had set the sanction at the time of the contempt hearing, which is typically how these things go, but I've seen it done both ways, where it's set and hearing it after the fact as well. In that case, on the day that he was supposed to report to jail for his 90-day sentence, he had not yet first been filed. He filed a motion to stay. That motion was granted, and then he filed his appeal. In that way, the sanction had been imposed but stayed pending appeal. He did not have to go to the jail. He was able to be heard. The contempt was ultimately affirmed, and he had sufficient time. I don't know. I didn't follow up. I'm not quite sure how the whole thing turned out. But he was afforded the right to appeal without having to go to jail. And I think that's the method available to parties if and when they feel they have been unfairly found in contempt. They then don't pay the purge. They are imposed whatever sanction it may be, whether it be attorney's fees, whether it be a jail sentence, whatever it is the court feels is coercive in nature in that case. And then they file a motion to stay. At that point, if the court requires a bond to be posted. I think in this case, appellant jumped the gun, posted the bond prior to any of the sanctions being She was ordered to do in the divorce decree. She had taken the appliance and she was ordered then to purge herself by reimbursing Dr. Bramble for those appliances. So that's the appellee's position as to whether or not it's a final appealable order. I don't believe it is, given the sanctions have been imposed. I think Messinger is very clear on that point. It was a lovely short case. In that instance where it says an order is final for purposes of appeal, if it A, affects a substantial right and meets one of the three standards, is made on summary application and action for judgment is rendered as one that applies in Arthur. That does apply, but no substantial right has been affected because no sanctions have been imposed. As a result, I don't think the court has jurisdiction in this case to hear it as no final order was entered.
Thank you. Do you have any further argument?
I don't, Your Honor. If the court has any questions as to our cross appeal, I'm happy to take those. Otherwise, I think our brief is fairly instructive.
Well, what record do we have to go on with respect to your cross appeal?
The only record that exists after the cross appeal is the motion that was filed and the hearing that was held. And the transcript, I believe, in the spell of exceptions would be inclusive of that. Unfortunately, it's not the best record, and I'll be the first to admit that. It's the motion. The motion was, I think I said filed, it was an oral motion made, but the transcript of that hearing was included in the bill of exceptions.
And then the actual oral motion in the record that was provided to us?
You'll have to forgive me, Ms. Fortress, as the attorney who appeared at that hearing. I believe it is reflected in the bill of exceptions. Unfortunately, I don't have it with me to confirm at this time.
Which hearing was that? Which hearing was that? Skipping up.
You'll let me refer to my brief with me. I believe it was brought up at the March 2016 contempt hearing, is when the oral motion was made.
Is that sufficient notice to the other side? The other side.
Under local rules, I believe 3 days written notice is required. However, the issue had been discussed previously. I don't think there was any unfair surprise.
Was there an objection by the other side of the hearing?
I don't recall having not been present at that hearing. However, the court dismissed it pretty much summarily at that point, so there was not further discussion.
What about the timeliness of the motion? Was it this 9 months down the road?
The reason for the timeliness of the motion was because the act had not yet been done. So what had happened was after the amended decree was entered, Ms. Bramble filed her own tax return. So even though it was for the year 2014, the act had not been committed yet that created the debt that would have otherwise been there.
Shouldn't maybe an application to modify filed at that point?
Yeah, we discussed the different possible procedural mechanisms that could have triggered it, and admittedly, it was not perfect. However, we were asking the court exercise its equity powers to reopen the case and to hear that issue, because as of the time the debt was created, it created a new marital debt, and then as a result, the court had not fully dissolved the marital estate.
Was there any order, there was nothing in the the decree that prohibited her from doing that, was there?
There was a provision that said parties shall not file any amended tax returns or do any act that would create a new debt to the other party. Whether or not who the debt belonged to was important, but the IRS pursued Dr. Bramble and decreed the debt, even though it was a result of Ms. Bramble filing an individual tax return for a year in which there had already been a joint tax return filed.
Had the amended decree been silent on the issue of the tax return?
On the 2014 tax return.
Well, I guess I'm curious as to, if you're saying that it was a joint return that was filed, doesn't that mean she had to sign it?
Yes. So a joint return.
Did she sign the joint return?
In 2014.
Or is there, I guess we maybe don't have any evidence of that.
I would imagine so. In 2014, Dr. Bramble filed a joint return on behalf of both parties.
Did he get her signature?
Can't speak to that.
No. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have any time left for rebuttal? Sorry, we don't. All right. Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We'll issue a decision as soon as we can. You're excused. The next case is May. Not getting these names right. Gatzemeyer versus Nyhall. Am I anywhere close on that, counsel?